Catherine, you're being way too hard on yourself. Your house is not in an absolute disarray. If your house was in disarray, you'd have two dead parents and a dead dog. Okay, so don't be so hard on yourself.
Oh, you're probably correct in that, but yeah, my house is in disarray.
It's not.
However.
No, okay, you may feel that way, but literally stand back and look at this.
I can't because there's no room to stand.
You well then stand outside. We're stand better yet, stand on the roof.
Okay.
You have two elderly parents who are, you know, I'm not going to say barely clinging on, but need a lot of help to get around.
Yeah.
And a dog.
Oh, my God. The dog.
Who I told you not to buy. Who is also basically on the roof. And they're all doing fine.
Yeah.
So don't be so hard on yourself.
I know.
Let me do that.
Okay.
Or we can be hard on someone else. Who should we be hard on this one?
I don't know. There's so many we can choose from. I say we stick with the quasi art world.
Or the anti-Semites. Ye.
What the hell's going on with that?
Kanye West. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Kanye.
Well, I woke up this morning and I opened up BBC and it wasn't one of the headlines. It was like one of the sub-headlines, but it was like Adidas drops Ye. It's like,
good.
Finally.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, Catherine. Does that mean we're going to lose our free speech?
No, but hopefully it'll help decrease hate speech. I mean, free speech isn't just anything you want to say.
Correct. I have to explain this to adults all the time, and it's really disappointing that people don't understand what free speech is.
Isn't
but
that
we've
true?
Talked about that before, so I
we
don't
have.
Think we need to recover.
Let's
it
not,
again.
Yeah, no, but
just the good news.
Mm-hmm. Good for Adidas.
Adidas finally nutted up and dropped Ye.
Good. Okay, moving on. What else are we updating?
That was the show.
That was the show. Okay, you have any updates?
I don't know what kind of tone you want the show to have on, you know, in our social media. So I held off on this one for a while, but
okay.
We did have a commenter. All of our comments so far have been positive because we're such remarkably positive people.
Right. What happened?
Well, we got a negative comment on Instagram.
Finally.
Which I thought it was kind of funny, actually.
Okay.
So.
Okay. What episode? What were they referencing?
Episode 62, Flat Earth AI Zombies, which is a phenomenal title, by the way. I think I came up with that. Or maybe you did. I don't remember.
I think
you came
I
up
did.
With the blurb, though. You did a great job on the blurb. I love
this
blurb.
I did the blurb.
Catherine and James eviscerate Flat Earth theory and the zombified appetite for alternative realities while predicting the future of AI art.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
That was very good. Thank you for that. And I'm glad I pushed you and I forced you unwillingly. Forced you to do the blurbs instead of just listing out the themes.
Yeah, I haven't thought about blurbs, but I like the blurbness. Go ahead. Okay,
yeah, well,
so what?
I used to do that a while back, but then I got lazy and did the.
It takes some time to
bullet
think
points,
about it. Mm-hmm.
And then you started doing the show notes, and you know, then I was like, I really like those blurbs. I bet I could force Catherine to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just
you
take
did.
A dog hostage or something. Anyway.
Oh my God. Take him.
A commenter by the name of Through the Selfie Glass says to that post, you two chumps won't eviscerate shit.
I love it. Thank you, Through the Selfie Glass. That was like, that's the funniest thing I've heard all day.
Poop is not hard to eviscerate. It's halfway there anyway, right? So you just get a masher and smash it up. How hard could that be?
So did you listen to the episode Through the Looking Glass?
Oh, I'm sure he didn't.
I mean... Through the Looking Glass.
No, my question, I'm curious, you know, how he found it, because...
Yeah, what were the hashtags?
So the hashtags on that one were podcast art, flat earth. I'm guessing he's a flat earther. That's probably what got him riled up. TikTok, Midjourney, Stable Diffusion, and AI. Of course, he could also be some kind of AI junkie who didn't really understand what we were saying and thought we were going to eviscerate AI.
Oh, maybe. It would have helped if he'd listened to the episode.
Either way... No matter how I parse this or eviscerate it, he comes out looking kind of stupid. So, but I didn't want to respond to him without talking to you first because I was going to kind of try to poke him a little bit because I have a little bit of a troll in me.
Do you now?
So I was gonna say something like bold words coming from someone hiding behind a private account.
Oh, it's a private account.
Oh, of course it is.
I was sure it's not a troll.
Little baby. Can't have a public accounting of his actions and deeds.
Are we sure it's not a bot?
Yeah, I can't see anything botish about that.
Nothing botish, you say, huh?
I don't see. I mean, a bot usually is trying to sell you something or trying to make Russia or China look like they're great.
Yeah, not just coming at us for not eviscerating shit.
a Russian bot would come in and say something like, well, you know, Ukraine was always part of Russia, and it's run by Nazis now.
Oh.
That's a bot thing to say.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's our first hate comment. So chalk one up for Subrant.
Well, the first one that's gone through.
Oh, other things may have come through and we didn't.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I delete stuff all the time.
Oh, do you?
But this one is just like, I don't know.
Wait, we get a lot of hate?
I wouldn't say we get a lot of hate. We get spam and we get some other comments that just aren't worth, you know, having up there. But this one, you know, and it's hit. I don't know who can see this because it's hidden. You have to tap on it to see it. And as a creator, I can see it, but I don't know if anyone else can.
I didn't see it.
Which is a little bit disappointing. I think, you know, you should be able to see people's stupidity.
What I see, if it'll say like there are four comments and I'll click on the four comments and sometimes there'll only be like three or two, you know.
That's because I'm deleting spam or other stupid comments.
Okay. So then this was hidden too because I always click to see what people are saying. And there's not a whole lot.
You're such a narcissist.
No, I'm just curious.
I'm curious about what people say about me. That's called narcissism.
Or the episode. Now, feedback's good. That wouldn't qualify as feedback. That's just silliness.
Well, it would be feedback if he was more specific.
Right.
What is he complaining about that we're not going to eviscerate? And how did we not eviscerate it?
Right.
That's what I want to know.
Maybe he's just triggered by the word eviscerate.
Maybe he doesn't know what it means.
Okay. What else?
That's all I have for follow-up.
Yeah. I didn't have any follow-up other than the t-shirts came.
Oh. God, those were a pain in the ass to make.
I loved it.
I complained about that already, though. Oh, that's great that you loved it. That makes it at least worthwhile.
I bought three of them just to see the quality of the actual product.
Mm-hmm. And oh, I keep forgetting. I got to put that on the website. But yeah, go ahead and buy some t-shirts then.
Yeah, and there was only one that was kind of flimsy. I think, was it the slouchy? I can't remember. I should have been more, or the scoop neck or something. I don't know. It was a women's version, and it's a little thin. We used to buy stuff like this at the yoga center. It was like, you know, with cool logos on it, but it was super thin. But the other ones, like the men's V-neck that I bought, is really nice quality, and I wasn't disappointed. I mean, it wasn't so cheesy that I'd be embarrassed that we are doing it on that platform.
That's a great endorsement. What? I wasn't disappointed.
I wasn't disappointed.
That should be the new sub tag for
buy our t-shirts. Sub-brand. I wasn't disappointed.
No, sub brand. I wasn't disappointed. At least. Got exactly what I expected.
I know. Oh, my God. Oh, are we really doing this today? Yes.
The painter
mm-hmm.
who revealed how our eyes really see the world.
Who might that be?
Oh, a painter does that. The scientists don't do that. The painter does that, mm-hmm. does he? Yeah, it's BS. Apparently it was Cezanne.
Oh.
Completely baffled by this BBC article. I don't know. It's almost like Cezanne's paying them to do good articles about him.
Right. I don't think he could do that.
I think BBC is just a shill now. What's that?
Oh, a shill for Cezanne. I see.
Yeah. Paid advertisement.
Okay. So we're discussing basically how we see art. Is that the topic?
No. It's how artists see the world and how they teach us how we really see the world. We think we're seeing the world in a way that we're not actually seeing the world.
Okay.
So he's breaking down the veil.
Breaking down the veil.
After the scientists did it. So here's the thing. Before the 1800s, people assumed that the eye was basically just a literal camera.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever was in front of you came through the lens of the eye, and the brain just saw it and processed it as it was. But we know, through many experimentations and whatnot, and through science, that what's in front of us is not what our brain tells us is in front of us. We do a lot of interpretation. You know, the easiest thing is, like, when you look at a cloud and you know, there are two kind of holes and then there's maybe a slight line below it, mm-hmm. we see that as a face because our brains try to recognize faces. So rather than just seeing a cloud, we see a face.
Right.
Our brains are super lazy. So any kind of algorithm it can use to just not actually process what's in front of us and just tell us, oh, there's a person, oh, there's a woman, there's a man, there's a child, whatever. It just takes shortcuts and do that. Rather than processing the whole image. So artists and scientists try to figure out those lies and try to play with them.
Right.
And the article was basically trying to say that Cezanne was the first artist of all time to have figured this out and tried to express it on a two-dimensional surface, which I find kind of silly, certainly very Western-centric.
Right, that was really the premise. It's like that all of a sudden he went from the static gaze or like a what they were talking about, like a camera obscura scenario.
Mm-hmm.
to the roving gaze, how our eyes, and then they go into this whole thing. But I didn't think that he was thinking that deep about it. Do you?
I don't know, because he's not around to tell us.
Right, so but don't artists dare...
Huge amount of speculation.
I know. But like when I was taking like a life drawing class way back in the day, and then you're trying to kind of focus on the whole figure. Like my stuff turned out looking wonky anyway. I think my eyes, period, are not that great. And I tend to warp things when I'm drawing. It just never looks like the actual line. I have a really hard time with that. But it's hard to take in the whole object. You have to focus on like the left side or the right side or the nose or the face. Faces were difficult for me. And why couldn't you stare at an eyeball for 20 minutes or something?
Well, the article makes the point that he was the first one to actually stare at these things so long as to start to break down what his brain was trying to tell him,
uh-huh.
fool him into seeing. So I think what you're getting at is the idea that he's the first artist to actually stare at his subjects.
Right. I don't think so he was.
Took a couple hundred thousand years for humans to figure that out. I'm thinking that's a big jump. And unless you can show any sliver of a piece of data to support that, I'm just going to throw it out with the trash.
Right. And I thought it was an interesting article. I read it. It was good. I thought it was interesting. I liked the examples they showed in terms of like the progression of his still lifes, you know, from the early sugar bowl and blue cup to still life with fruit dish. And I preferred still life with fruit dish, by the way. And that mm-hmm. was more with the roving gaze. I mean, he was essentially an impressionist.
Right. Yeah, he grew up with the impressionists.
Right.
He was right there with them. And
Right there with them.
You could, if you look at his work on a timeline, you can mm-hmm. clearly see how he's being inspired by, well, I'll use the generous term, inspired by the impressionists.
Mm-hmm.
He's working next to them and alongside them. So this isn't unusual.
Right. And then as you move forward in life and mature and experiment with all kinds of things on canvas, I mean, don't you think you start just doing different things? I mean, why does he have to stay in the impressionist camp?
Well, I think you always try to experiment a little bit. And some mm-hmm. people experiment more and some people experiment less.
Right.
And this is a point, you know, the impressionism is a point at which the art world is being overturned.
Mm-hmm.
The French art world at that time was ruled by the Academy, and the Impressionists came along and basically turned that upside on its head. And so there was a lot of, the art world started moving pretty quickly at that point.
I think this morphed rather quickly into like a pre-Cubist scenario.
Yeah, that's a good point. He starts to play with Cubism, and mm-hmm. I don't think it's wrong to say that he invented Cubism.
No.
It's pretty subtle in some of his work. Oh, it's really kind of funny.
What?
One of the curators says this really kind of bizarre thing, and this is a quote from the article. The fact that he intentionally retained mistakes in his final paintings does not mean that Cézanne was careless. On the contrary, according to Natalia Sedlina, a mm-hmm. curator at the Tate Modern Exhibition, Cézanne was thoughtful and well-read. Cézanne translated Latin manuscripts for fun, she told BBC Culture, mm-hmm. and was friends with some of the leading scientists in fields like natural science, geology, and optics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't know how translating Latin supports your argument that he wasn't careless as a painter. I am a pretty meticulous painter. I'm a pretty meticulous podcaster, but mm-hmm. I am very careless when it comes to cooking. So if if an archaeologist digs up my cooking 300 years from now, and they're like, well, I know this looks very simple, but since James was such a detailed person in every other aspect of his life, mm-hmm. he couldn't possibly have been careless as a cook, too.
Right. Yeah, I saw that.
You know, curators really should go to school. They should be forced to actually take classes.
Well, I think they do go to school.
No, but they should be like real classes, not just art history and art theory, mm-hmm. but actual classes in science and rhetoric and things like that. Maybe media studies, too. I don't know. Just something where they could actually learn to become critically intelligent people instead of the Muppets that they are.
Anyway, this exhibit at the London Tate Museum is allegedly presenting this artist, Cézanne, who unveils strange truths about human perception. I don't know that he did or didn't. I know there's a lot of discussion. And if you look, you know, kind of dig deeper into Cézanne, there's a lot of that kind of verbiage around his work that he was unfolding like ways of seeing. But don't artists do that anyway?
Yeah, and I think the Impressionists were doing that. So this
right.
was pretty much in keeping. He is pushing the bounds, though. He's kind of like on the edge of Impressionism and Post-Impressionism
mm-hmm.
or Expressionism. Well, I guess not expressionism, but post-impressionism.
Yeah, post-impressionism. So to sum up this whole situation, it's like, I like Cezanne's work. I've always been impressed by it. I mean, I think it's magical in many ways. I did prefer of the two still lifes, the one that was a little bit more distorted. To me, it's like through the natural maturation process, aging process, experimental process. I mean, what is a lot of painting other than experimenting on canvas? I mean, I see it all as an experiment. And so he was dabbling and looking at things differently and moving through impressionism. So what? I mean, so that's cool.
Well, that's,
and
then, you know, okay, I mean, that, that's kind of dismissive.
I'm not dismissive, but I think
he's working on it. And he's like, I think we agree that he invented cubism. I think that's
right.
a kind of an accepted idea.
Yeah.
That doesn't just happen on its own.
So you think he really thought about it?
Well, he had some work. He was working through the process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say that he didn't have lots of things to look at to push him in that direction. Mm-hmm. Like I said at the beginning, this is a remarkably Western-centric. I'm surprised that they allowed this piece to be printed, because I would assume that the woke people would just push back, rightly so, on this one. I mean, one of the things they say is, quote, Cezanne was the midwife of 20th century modernist art movements.
Yeah, the midwife. Uh-huh. I know.
I would put in Western modernist mm-hmm.
You're
art
right.
movements,
mm-hmm.
because if we look back in history, like thousands of years, other cultures, mm-hmm. and some also in the West, flattened out things, distorted things to put them on a flat surface. I mean,
right.
the Japanese knew that they were painting on a flat surface, so their imagery took that into account. You know, a lot of stuff is flattened out. The ancient Egyptians did the same thing. They were carving, and now the ancient Egyptians are an interesting example, because we have a few examples of things that they carved that were not important, that were not thought to be important,
mm-hmm.
like servants. And they were highly naturalistic. They knew how to actually paint and to carve, but when it came to the formal stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, they had a formalized language for their visual language. Their visual language is highly formalized. So that's where they do all the abstraction. So they have a choice. You know, mm-hmm. when an Egyptian artisan wakes up in the morning, he's like, I know how to paint and draw, but I'm going to use a formalized abstraction to do the temple, because that's what, otherwise they'll probably cut my head off.
Okay.
I'm sorry, that was a bit of a divergence.
That was divergence, yes.
But I want to reiterate, because it did bother me a little bit, that the whole article is a masterclass in overanalyzing while simultaneously ignoring anything beyond the Western world.
Mm-hmm.
The modern Western world, even at that. Because you look back at the early Renaissance and you can see distortion. I mean, we didn't even, the West didn't even understand perspective until, I guess, the mid-Renaissance. I think that's when they, quote, invented perspective or discovered. Before that, it's all stacked up and abstracted.
Well, they were trying to make a point, I guess.
Who?
The article.
Yeah, of course they're trying to make a point. They're trying to sell tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wishing they would, you know, take some more time and use people who actually knew what they were talking about and not make this stuff up and not distort the whole history of art.
Distort the whole history of distortion.
They've just eviscerated.
They've eviscerated the early 20th century.
They've eviscerated the shit out of early 20th century art
history.
They
did. I want to put that on a t-shirt.
Maybe this is the guy.
This is the guy.
From our comment section.
Maybe.
Through the selfie lens, I think it was. Yeah, this is probably who the writer is. Anyway. Got any other thoughts about Cezanne?
I don't. I just think that I'm glad he did it. That's the art critic. That's
yep.
the level I'm functioning at today.
I would love to see that. That would be a great article. The BBC comes to you to talk to you about
yes,
the
uh-huh.
Cezanne show
mm-hmm.
that you're putting on at the Tate. And they ask you, so Catherine, what do you think about Cezanne?
And I just say, I'm glad he did it.
Boom. Article's over. That's the kind, you know, that's the way the BBC used to be.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have these really short and sweet articles. And now I'll read three or four paragraphs
right.
Of a BBC article these days. And I'll just give up, because they won't have even gotten to the point where 10 years ago, that's all I would have had was like four paragraphs of the whole story, because they just used to get to the point.
Yeah, no, to me, it's like, had he, I don't know, do they have any kind of records of his process? That would have been interesting to me to look at that. But to me, like if I was going to be interviewed, it'd be like, you know, okay, here's this guy. He kind of grew up and nurtured his impressionistic roots. And then he may or may not have gotten bored with that or started seeing things differently. Maybe has some thoughts about how the visual world occurs. And then also during that time, you know, wasn't that the onset of photography at some point?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And so in early photography, and I'd read this before, that it was disappointing. Early photography was disappointing. And so if they were disappointed with photography as painters, and they thought it was drab, then why not just go further? It's like, so obviously when you're looking, if he had that thought, it's like, okay, so I'm looking through my eyes. And then this is like with photography. I thought this was what it was and it isn't. So let me go further. And then the experimentation starts and then you got a toe in cubism. And I think that's a beautiful process. And that's all. I don't know that all this other stuff.
Well, I don't know that you can really draw that line without knowing more about Cézanne. I mean, if you had...
If we had like... documentation, that's what I'm saying. This is all.
Okay.
This is all pretend, James. I'm just pretending because everyone else is pretending because he's long gone. And okay. I don't know how much he documented his process. But to me, that makes sense. So in my little story world, you know, that's how it happened.
Okay, it makes a certain amount of sense. I don't really buy the idea that they were disappointed with photography. If you're disappointed in photography, you're not doing it right. So that's on that. That's the last thing I want to say about it.
Okay, yeah, let's just move on. But in terms of process, I came upon a little piece about how does art involve experience?
Mm-hmm.
And just the only takeaway, I don't want to really waste a lot of time, was like in terms of the process.
You think this is just a waste of time?
Waste of time. Well, I don't know. We should ask our critic.
No. I don't want to keep referencing that
okay,
one person.
Okay, don't. Okay, so anyway, no, I don't think it's a waste of time.
Thank you.
No, not at all. Process, the process art. Do you believe, I mean, because we were talking about Cézanne's process, and if he didn't document it in the way that like Da Vinci documented extensively, like there was a lot of process documentation with Da Vinci's work. Do you think that everything that an artist makes is actually art, that it's on the process as opposed to the canvas?
No, the process isn't the art. The art is the art. And it either is or isn't, and not every piece is successful.
Okay.
Was that too black and white?
Because this article that I found, like, why does art involve experience? A look into the world of art, just talked about process art as being the form of art where everything the artist made from the moment of inspiration as well as the final product was the art. And some of the things, and it just reminded me of Da Vinci's Code Leicester, I think it is. Leicester. The Codex Leicester.
Don't use fussy words with me.
No, that's what it's called. It's Bill Gates owns it. It's like a 36 or 38 page booklet and that they kind of deconstructed. And I actually saw it in exhibition. And I spent a lot of time there looking at every single piece. And it really detailed, it was like his handwriting and how he wrote kind of backward, like he would write backwards. Like
right.
He would write from, it was so captivating. And I was so taken by that work of this codex. I wish I could still look at it. It was that captivating.
Well, I'm sure you can.
Yeah. Oh, no, you can. You can somewhere. Like I said, Bill Gates owns it. But,
okay.
You know, why but you, to me that.
Are you getting paid by Bill Gates to mention his name?
No, Bill Gates doesn't know me.
Because I want some of that too.
No, Bill Gates doesn't know me. So that's all I wanted to say about that. I don't know.
I think that's completely silly, though, to think that everything they do is part of the art. Their work is the art, and everything else is a prelude to that.
Okay, which is kind of a touchstone for like into AI. So then it becomes like, is it the process or is it the output? What is it? Is the artist like an AI collaborator, or is or not the artist the person, the human? Is the human?
What, is the person inputting the text?
Yeah, is the human who's inputting the text.
Do you want to come up with a term for that person?
AI collaborator, I would go with AI that.
Well, that seems, I don't know, I get a little bit of Nazi overtones to that.
Oh, no. We don't need any more of that in the state of Arizona. No, just say no. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just like if you're saying that process art, it was kind of the segue into like we were talking a lot about AI. And then I came upon that article and I just kind of parsed out the process art pieces. But it's like, okay, so if you're saying that everything is it, then how does this apply or does it apply to AI generated images?
Oh, we're talking about AI again, are we?
Yeah, James, we always seem to go back to AI. How about if we just have a separate podcast and we'll just discuss, there's a lot going on with AI. I think
okay.
We should just focus on
that.
What do you
think
about
our next our next podcast will again be on AI.
Oh good. All right. That's it.